This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Ganesan. Tonight, on the eve of Malaysia Day, we are celebrating arts and culture from Sabah and Sarawak and talking about how they continue to evolve.
First, we speak with a social enterprise that's focused on ensuring traditional arts practitioners have sustainable income from their art forms. Then we catch up with an arts collective that's innovating and subverting woodcut prints. Finally, a musician who incorporates her Indigenous heritage into contemporary music.
So we want to know, do you think that the arts play an important role in expressing our culture and heritage? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:09, and as promised, today is a Malaysia Day special that is really focused on highlighting arts and culture from Sabah and Sarawak, and I think just all the different ways in which they are continuing to be practiced, the different ways in which they are evolving.
So I don't think it needs to be highlighted how incredibly diverse Sabah and Sarawak are, right? Sarawak is made up of 26 different ethnic groups. Sabah has 32. And each of these have different languages and different art forms and practices and cultures. Unfortunately, I think when it comes to the national stage and what is presented as arts or culture from these two states, they tend to be quite uniform or samey. They tend to fall again and again into that idea of what we, for lack of better word, the kind of thing that we see being presented on tourism videos. Very, very uniform ideas of what the art forms from this space are. And I think that's unfortunate because there's actually a lot of really interesting work being done, both in terms of celebrating and highlighting traditional art forms, but also sort of moving that forward, keeping it continuously relevant, bringing them into, I suppose, an accessible space.
And this is something that we've talked about here on the show in a number of different avenues before, because the assumption also is that with traditional art forms, with Indigenous practitioners in particular, that they're always stuck in the role of preservation, as if it is
custodians.
Static. Custodians, yes. As if it is static, as if it is something that is unchangeable from the past and they're just meant to be here transmitting that to us in the modern audience, as opposed to thinking about art as something that is alive, that is a live practice of heritage, an expression of heritage. Hence our question today. We want to know, do you think that the arts play an important role in expressing our culture and heritage? We're asking this on the eve of Malaysia Day, of course. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. As promised, The focus of our show really is going to be on arts and culture from Sabah and Sarawak. We wanted to start off actually with a social enterprise that's focused on trying to ensure that people who are traditional arts practitioners actually get to make a living, because surprise, that is very important. So that is coming up after this. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:13 and you're listening to Inside Story on Malaysia Day, which is why today we are focused on celebrating arts and culture from Sabah and Sarawak and talking about how they are continuing to evolve. And we are just about to speak with a social enterprise that focuses on ensuring that traditional arts practitioners have sustainable income. But we'd also like to hear from you. Do you think that the arts play an important role in expressing our culture and heritage? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us. And now we are crossing over to Juvita Tatanwan, who is the co-founder of the Tuyang Initiative. Juvita, thank you for speaking with us. We thought we'd start by asking, how did the Tuyang Initiative come about?
So in order to tell the Tuyang story, I think I'll take this all the way back. My late grandfather was someone who encouraged formal education and had pushed my father to excel in studies so he could become successful. And at that time, you basically had to go further and further away from your community to achieve this so-called success. It meant that you had to get an education, be someone, get a good job, and hopefully come back and contribute to your community in some unclear way. And it's a foreign concept to our people whose values are actually very deeply rooted in being a community. Now, back to my dad. After his university education, he eventually got a job with Malaysia's oil and gas giant. Because of his job, we moved around a lot. And the one thing he always did, though, was to ensure that we go back to our village every year. You know, he taught us swimming in the rivers, hunting and fishing, listening to stories from our elders, the celebrations, where we learn songs and the dances. And it's all just part of our community's way of life, right? So for me, as someone who was raised in different towns in Malaysia, going back to our village really helped root us. I think it also gave us some context, even in adulthood, as to why we feel a certain way about some things. And this was, I think, even truer when I spent close to 15 years working in corporate KL. You know, the hustling, the rush life, and a lot of that meant less and less trips back to our village and less connection to our community. But I think the turning point was after the death of one of my most beloved uncle, Uncle Peter, where I had to make the trip back. I think at that time, I felt a different kind of sadness. And it was then that I started to ask myself, is this the fate of our community? You know, are we now meant to keep leaving it and then going back during festivities or death? What happens to the different long passed down knowledge that has happened naturally? What happens to our values? You know, who will be there to receive the stories from our elders? You know, these were all questions at the back of my mind. And starting up Tuyang properly, I think in 2017, perhaps in some way, my desperate attempt at ensuring that who we are don't disappear with my father's generation. Because if it does, then who are we and where do we stand, you know, in this world, right? So our focus with Tuyang, I think, as a community-led arts measurement company, is looking at empowering our cultural guardians to be able to tell our stories. And what we intend to do is to provide our practitioners with creative and cultural industry skill sets to also lead our own efforts in ensuring our cultural continuity. And Tuyang actually means friend in the Penyah language, just to give you a bit of trivia there.
So could you tell us about the practitioners that you work with and the art forms that they practice?
So our first practitioner that we brought on board was Matthew Ngau Jiao. He's a Penyah Ngorek from Long Semiang in Baram. And he's actually one of Malaysia's living national heritage. One out of 20, I believe. It could be less now. And this was a recognition he was given due to his work in actively reviving the Sabdet and by performing as well as making the instrument. And we also have Adrian Jo Milang. He's a 23-year-old Kayan oral tradition practitioner from Tubao. He practices sang poetry called Parap and Tegnat, and is currently one of the most celebrated and youngest practitioner. We also, in the last 2 years, took him on board as a community manager for Tuyang so that he can also grow and expand personally and professionally. We also work with wonderful weavers from the Penan community in Baram. We have worked with Juan Jonita and the ladies in her community who does very intricate rattan weaving, specifically to cater to the bespoke work we do with different clients, so be it from interior design to home decor pieces. Yeah, and we have a lot more that we can talk about, but I think those are the three that comes to mind right now.
And what role do arts practitioners play in safeguarding and growing cultural heritage in Sabah and Sarawak?
So the arts, I feel, is a crucial tool in order to have conversations and key way for people to learn about our communities and its culture. And that's why I think it's crucial in that respect. But I also feel that for us who are part of this transitional generation, have also a crucial role to play in safeguarding and in ensuring the growth of our cultural heritage. It feels like it's fighting tide sometimes, but if it isn't ourselves, the generation who now have the tools, the language to be able to articulate the needs and how to make it work, then who else is going to do it, right? Apart from that, I think it's also important for everyone else to understand that what is deemed as art practices is actually part of a living culture. Just an example, we didn't sing merely because it was entertainment. We were singing as a way to break barriers with enemies, you know, or a tool in peacemaking. Crafting baskets wasn't because it's beautiful artwork, you know, it's actually for functional reasons, for customary purposes. I think it's important that everybody remember for Indigenous culture and art, it's part of a living culture. So, yeah.
So what have been some of the obstacles for Indigenous arts practitioners when it comes to earning a livelihood through art?
I think one of the key obstacles faced is that traditional arts gets pigeonholed into this space where it's not relevant in our current context of this globalized world, which is actually not the case. But that's how it is treated a lot of times here in Malaysia. And traditional arts practitioners don't get that same level of recognition or opportunities as contemporary peers, right? So you'd be surprised how much traditional arts practitioners get paid when they're invited to a show organized by either tourism-related events or official government-related events. It's really heartbreaking. A lot of these practitioners are masters of their craft, and because of that pigeonhole, they can't command that same fees as their contemporary peers. So yeah, another obstacle is traditional arts are utilized to sell or position as an exotic tourism product, you know, rather than being looked at as something that could potentially grow with the country, with this people. And I think the third obstacle is that our arts practitioners don't also necessarily have the skill sets as their contemporary peers for multiple reasons. If you're rural-based, you probably don't understand the context of the business aspect of entertainment or the arts. So it's very hard for them to be able to understand if they're receiving a fair fee, for example, or what is the treatment that they should be receiving as a guest artist. So that's a couple of the key obstacles I personally observe.
And how are you working to address these obstacles?
So in Tuyang, we work with practitioners beyond the usual format of presentation of our cultural practices, right? The typical form would be, let's say, as a musician, I invite you, you play a set, showcase your regalia, costumes, and play us some tunes, and then that's it. But what we do instead is we look at the opportunities in the different format of presentations. We believe that that's the way that we can showcase the breadth, the depth, and the variety, as well as increase the appreciation and value of the different aspects of our culture and tradition. And what's also most important is in making it accessible to everyone. So one core aspect of what we do is we collaborate with different industry partners to identify various ways that we can meaningfully present it at a certain level of artistry. So that way, everyone from arts and culture aficionados to art snobs will be able to come and experience the work. You know, they won't feel like, oh, traditional arts, like I'm not going to go for that. That's a way that can draw a different group of people to come and witness our people and our culture. So that was something that we did back in 2019. With Kelunan, which is a story that was presented in a musical theatre format, and it was done purely in the Kayan and Penyah languages. And yeah, we had great feedback from that show that kind of gave us the reassurance that we need that we're on the right track. And just to also share, our next big collaboration, I don't think I can talk about it yet, but it's with a renowned arts festival, and we're going to be working on a new piece with the orchestra from said country, and we will be opening the festival, fingers crossed, next year with this piece. And we're very, very excited about this because it's coming to the end of the second year of us not being able to go out and get people to connect with our people and culture. So we're very excited about that one.
Now, what's particularly important is that you do focus on making sure that these economic initiatives are sustainable. Now, how do you build that into the process?
So by doing these kind of collaborations with different partners, our practitioners get a chance to grow their skill sets and also build their portfolio. Because of that, they are then able to take on new roles and new functions with other art organizations or other people in need of their expertise. That way, it's not just about us giving them a gig, but it's literally about strengthening their skill sets so that they are able to take on a more proactive and leading role in working with different people, in sharing our stories. We think about the generation in transition, like myself. The circumstances have put us here today that we're somewhat disconnected from our culture. And these circumstances have, well, if we'd like to look at it optimistically, given us a different set of tools that we can use and collaborate with our elders in finding the new way of how we can pass down their knowledge. We even look at things like how can we develop language classes through songs and poetry as an easier method to teach our Indigenous languages to the next generation. As much as one feels sad that things are declining, you know, less and less people are in the villages. And I think if you look on the flip side, now that we have a different set of tools at our disposal, how can we make it work to ensure that we don't lose our cultural heritage?
How else do you hope to see economic and employment opportunities grow for these artists?
The way I see it, with the new skill sets that our practitioners gain in the collaborative work we do, I hope to see them being engaged in these new capacities, you know, beyond them just being commissioned as traditional artists alone. So I think for these set of practitioners, the way I see it happening in the future is that they can then take an active lead in thinking about this new model and way of working, because what has happened in the past, it's more of opportunities presented to them to showcase their culture. So it was very top-down, one way. But in this context of how we've been working with them, they started seeing this new collaborative model that hopefully is something that can be replicated. What's also most important is that we start seeing the younger generation take interest in our culture and our traditions. And I think that's a very promising sign that the work that we do is resonating not just with the wider audience, but also with those from our generation who may feel disconnected from our own culture at a particular point of time. We can possibly have a thriving sector within the wider creative and cultural industry.
Juvita, in closing, what are your hopes for the future of Sarawak arts and culture?
This one is always a hard one to answer. I don't know why. Well, my hope is that more and more cultural guardians are given the tools and opportunities to champion their culture. I think right now, especially through the work that we do, we're starting to see that our so-called traditional arts practitioners can grow in their capacity beyond being just mere performers. So I think if given the right tools, be it through arts education or specific programs that can match these practitioners with industry, I think that would be the fast-track way to grow our practitioners. They are already so rich with experience in their culture and tradition. If given the right tools and skill sets, they can take the lead in driving this forward. And apart from that, I mean, one of my biggest hopes for us here in Sarawak is to meaningfully include aspects of our arts and culture into our formal education. That's something that has been missing. If we are able to look at incorporating these lessons into co-curricular activities, you know, as a start, I think that's one of the ways that we can then cultivate this interest, especially in the young, to think about their origins. and their communities. That's something that we need to cultivate more of, so we have more empathetic, more understanding for the diversity that exists in not just our state, but our country.
Juvita, thank you so much for taking the time.
No worries. It's my pleasure. Thanks so much for inviting me back.
That was Juvita Tatanwan, co-founder of the Tuyang Initiative. If you'd like to find out more about their work, you can head over to thetuyang.com or find them on Facebook and Instagram. And we've been talking, of course, about how traditional arts practitioners in Sabah and Sarawak can make a living, really, out of doing what they do and why that matters. This is on the eve of Malaysia Day. We'd like to hear from you. Do you think that arts play an important role in expressing our culture and heritage here in the country? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be hearing from artists. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:38 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We have a Malaysia Day special today in which we're celebrating arts and culture from Sabah and Sarawak and talking about how they continue to evolve. And earlier, we heard from a social enterprise called the Tuyang Initiative, which is focused on ensuring that traditional arts practitioners can actually continue to practice their art by making money from it and how to do that in a long-term sustainable way. And now we want to focus on people who are actually practicing, who are arts practitioners themselves. In the meantime, we'd like to hear from you. Do you think the arts play an important role in expressing our culture and our heritage? That number to call is 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we're going to be hearing from Jerome Manjat, who is the co-founder of Bangrok Sulap, a Malaysian collective composed of artists, musicians and social activists that focus on empowering rural and marginalized communities through art. Jerome preferred to speak in Malay, so you'll be hearing that, but we'll also be summarizing his key points along the way.
As Bangrok Sulap is known for using traditional woodcut prints to highlight current political and social issues, we first started by asking him about the connection between woodcut prints and Sabahan culture.
Seni kiran ini memang dalam budaya di Borneo lah. Di mana-mana culture di sini kita ada seni ukiran. Jadi secara tidak langsung dia ada kaitan lah.
So Jerome explains that this art form has always been integrated in the Borneo culture and that it's commonly used within different cultures in Sabah.
So we also asked him about how the arts collective embodies a punk spirit and what this represents when it comes to his work.
Semangat DIY, spirit DIY itu yang kita terapkan dalam kolektif ini, DIY, do it yourself. Itu yang kita terapkan untuk buat apa-apa perkara lah yang kami selalu buat. Karya kolektif biasanya mengenai tentang respon kami terhadap sesuatu situasi ataupun keadaan lah yang macam sedang berlaku di depan mata ataupun yang apa yang kami dengar. Jadi melalui respon itu kami olah. Dia menjadi sebuah karya yang biasa dia memberi nasihat, peringatan untuk diri sendiri dan juga untuk masyarakat.
So he explained that the way that the punk spirit is expressed in this collective is through a do-it-yourself, a DIY ethos. He also said that the art collective is about their response to a situation that, you know, has either happened to them personally or from what they've observed. They then turn this into art in order to remind themselves as well as the community.
Next, Jerome spoke about the kind of stories that he hopes to tell about Malaysia through his art.
Kami akan hasilkan karya berdasarkan yang apa yang kami nampak lah gitu. Jadi sebagai contoh, bila kita pergi di kampung-kampung, bila kita pergi di sana, kita tengok kita punya keadaan, and then kita sharing kita punya pengalaman, dan dia also sharing orang punya pengetahuan gitu. Jadi dari sana selalunya kita akan belajar bersama lah. So dari situ timbul niat untuk buat satu karya. Biasanya kita akan buat karya itu bersama dengan penduduk kampung lah. Dari sana kita dapat bantu orang kampung untuk bagi tahu orang punya cerita, apa masalah orang, macam itu. Nah, jadi dari hasil karya yang kita buat bersama tuh, kita akan pamerkan di mana-mana galeri lah. Jadi melalui itu selalunya kita akan dapat share cerita yang orang ada dengan orang di luar.
So Jerome said that when Pangrok Sulap visit the different villages, people learn about each other from sharing their various experiences. They produce art along with the rural communities, and that this helps uplift their stories as well as to shed light on the issues that they might face. He also said that the art that is produced from this will then be presented in exhibitions for people from outside of those communities to see.
We also asked how woodcut printing can be an effective way to communicate political and social messages.
Kalau bercakap tentang political, mungkin sebab isu kami lebih kepada social. Jadi selalunya social dia berkait rapat dengan politik. Biarpun ada satu ketika bila kita buat karya tuh, dia cuma mengenai tentang social issue. Tapi orang salah anggap dia jadi political. Jadi saya pun kadang-kadang merasa macam, oh, oke, okay, itu respon orang. Tapi untuk seni cetakan yang kami hasilkan ini, dia sebenarnya sangat mudah untuk dihasilkan. Senang dibuat di mana-mana, boleh buat di tepi kaki lima begitu, tepi jalan, kita boleh bawa benda ini di kampung, sekolah, dan sebagainya lah. Dan yang paling best lagi, dia cepat kita untuk sampaikan message. Contoh, bila kita siap cetak poster, kita boleh bagi orang. Dan yang best lagi tentang seni cetakan ini, kita boleh cetak berulang-ulang kali dan ya, kita boleh bagi ramai lagi orang lah untuk sebarkan message.
So Jerome explained that the issues faced by the rural communities are mainly social as opposed to political, though he says that talking about this and translating it into art can sometimes be misinterpreted as creating political art. He did say also that woodcut printing is easy to produce, it can be made anywhere, it's accessible, and it is a quick way to get a message across. It can be printed out many times. He gave the example of posters, for instance.
So Jerome then talked about the kind of messages that can be conveyed through these woodcut prints.
Selalunya kalau macam kita mau bagi peringatan untuk diri sendiri, kita boleh buat satu poster yang ilmu itu pelita hidup. Sungai itu Facebook kita, gitu. Tapi kebanyakan message yang kita buat tuh bergantung dengan situasi dan tempat. Kalau macam di Sabah, kita selalu guna ayat-ayat yang bahasa-bahasa pasar yang orang Sabah senang untuk paham. Jadi kita memang guna pakai situasi itu untuk tarik perhatian orang untuk mudah paham hasil karya yang kita cipta.
So he said most of the messages depend on the situation and the places. So in Sabah, for instance, they tend to use colloquial language in their art so that people can understand it better.
So we next asked him how the collective has changed over time.
Kita bergiat aktif dalam seni cetakan 2013 dan sampailah sekarang. Jadi banyak yang kita belajar sepanjang kegiatan berkolektif. Saya masih ingat kita bermula dari jalanan, and then sekarang kita sudah punya studio sendiri, and then kita ada banyak ahli juga yang datang dan pergi, and then banyak pelajaran yang kita dapat dari sepanjang berkolektif lah. And then itu juga yang saya rasa macam agak membanggakan sebab kita sudah dapat tolong, walaupun tidak banyak, tapi kita ada dapat membantu beberapa buah kampung untuk coba membagi mereka perubahan. Sebagai contoh, kita hasil karya yang kita buat tuh selalunya kita pulangkan semula kepada orang kampung, and then dari situ orang macam contoh yang hasil karya kita buat yang bersama dengan orang kampung tuh kan, kita dapat hasil dia, kita bikin macam rumah untuk pusat craft begitu. Jadi orang kampung boleh guna bangunan tuh untuk kumpul hasil craft mereka macam tuh. Dan yang terbaru nih, kita tengah mencari dana untuk project mini hydro di kampung-kampung pedalaman di Sabah lah.
So Jerome talked about how they started doing art on the streets, but now they have their own studio, and that the collective has helped a lot of rural communities. They try to return the profits directly to the villages. And for instance, they've used the profits to build craft homes for the communities. They're also collecting funds for a mini hydro project within rural areas.
Finally, we asked Jerome how he sees Pangrok Sulap evolving.
Sebenarnya kita masih dalam proses belajar, tapi untuk setakat ini kita coba buat satu, kami sedang coba eksperimen untuk buat coba ajak lebih ramai golongan muda, terutama dia untuk turut serta dalam aktiviti ini. And then terbaru kita baru launch kita punya website, jadi saya rasa lagi mudah orang untuk cari apa-apa aktiviti di dalam website yang kami buat tuh. Boleh cek di www.pangroksulap.com. Di situ semua kita punya aktiviti, jualan merchandise, semua sekali lah apa-apa tentang Pangrok Sulap kita akan letak di dalam website.
So Jerome said that they're still in the learning process, but they are encouraging more young people to participate in their activities. They did recently launch a website that showcases all of their activities. Merchandise is available for purchase as well. If you'd like to check that out, their website is pangroksulap.com.
So after this, we are going to be hearing from Alina Murang, Malaysian singer-songwriter and sape player. That, of course, was Jerome Manjat, who is the co-founder of Pangrok Sulap. And we've been spending this hour on Inside Story focused on arts and culture from Sabah and Sarawak and talking about its evolution. If you'd like to share your thoughts, send them our way. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Bia Fikiran Melayang, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:50 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We are focused today on Inside Story on arts and culture from Sabah and Sarawak. We've been hearing from social enterprises supporting artists and now we're hearing from artists themselves. So we are crossing over to Alina Murang, Malaysian singer-songwriter and sape player. Alina, thank you for speaking with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you've been playing the sape since you were a child. Could you talk to us about how you've seen your style and artistry develop?
Yeah, I've been playing sape for over 20 years and it's developed a lot more in the last maybe 8 years where I've had a lot more influences and kind of worked with the band to also develop this new sound for the sape and to work with other instruments and other genres too. So in my latest album, we've got influences from native Taiwan music, from Celtic music, from rock, from a bit of pop as well. So yeah, it's really exciting exploring everything.
So one thing that you tend to do is incorporate both Kalabit and Kenyah into your songs. Why is that important to you?
It's important to me to use these two languages because they're endangered languages. And many people don't know that about 80% of languages in Malaysia are endangered or threatened. And, you know, I'm from a Kalabit heritage and even I'm not fluent in the language and I learn it a lot more through song. And I think songs are a great way to learn languages. I mean, I just think about how many people know the lyrics to Despacito and do not know what it means, you know? And it's still such a famous song.
Yeah, actually, that's a spot on example. You mentioned earlier your latest album, right? And how you're working to kind of evolve your sound. And your music video, Warrior Spirit, features the culture of Borneo, but it is presented in a contemporary way. Could you talk to us about the inspiration behind that idea?
Yes. So I work a lot with my cousins and we really kind of sit down and do a lot of research into, for example, what the sape was used for, what are the songs meant for and things like that. And then, you know, upon more reflection, I realized that my elders, when they sang a song, they would change the lyrics and they would change the tunes so that it would reflect their own times and it would reflect their own environment. And I realized that they were being contemporary and modern in their own times. And what we do now is to also, you know, adapt the songs, adapt the tunes to our own times and our own contexts. And I think we do it in a way that honors the past as much as we can and that honors our contemporary selves as well as young Kalabit and Kenya people.
So what is the response to the music video and the song been?
To Warrior Spirit?
Yep.
The response has been so overwhelming. I'll let you on a little secret. So both for Warrior Spirit and Midang Midang music video, I didn't see the final output until everybody else saw it. I was watching the first cut, everyone else. And I think I felt the way many people felt. They felt that it was kind of otherworldly, but inward as well, you know, and although it's very strongly depicting the Orang Ulu cultures, I think a lot of people found themselves in it, especially during these times. And we had many frontliners as well tell us it was their anthem when they were putting on their PPEs. So that was really lovely too.
And it's won multiple awards. It has garnered international recognition. How has this helped, do you think, in amplifying the stories of Bornean communities?
Well, what I've always tried to set out to do is I wanted to travel with my music because I wanted the music and the language to, you know, land on people's ears, because I feel that when people hear our language and our songs, it means that it's kept alive. It means that it's very much alive. And, you know, the music video has gone through film festivals across the world. Even though we can't travel right now, people across the world and are watching the music video. And, you know, I hope that they take away a new, you know, new stories and new insights about Sarawak and Borneo and Malaysia as well.
Alina, what are your hopes for the future of music from Sarawak?
Oh, I have many hopes. Actually, one of the first ones I'm going to talk about, because I was talking about it yesterday to a friend, is I hope that communities can get IPs for their folk song so that every time they're played, they can get a royalty from it. It's a bit of a complicated process. So I really hope that, and I hope that Sarawakian music that's more kind of world music or indigenous music, I hope that it is seen as music for itself, you know, not just as, you know, music for tourism ads or music for Gawai ads, but just seen as music that you can listen to all year round, anytime you want, you know?
Alina, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
That was Alina Murang, singer-songwriter as well as sape player. And of course, because we spoke so much about Warrior Spirit, that is what we'll be playing out with. Keep your thoughts coming. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Happy Malaysia Day. Here is Alina Murang with Warrior Spirit, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.